because those tissues are under stress and distress, but a microbe isn't necessarily being thought of as being the cause. And so then a lot of times people get labeled as having autoimmune disease, because here, look at these proteins are elevated. You know, this is happening. We don't know why this is happening. This is just happening to you.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. And we don't want you to worry about taking too many notes, so you can join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club, and we'll send you the transcripts and show notes from every episode. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and it's my pleasure to be with you here on another episode of the Autoimmune Hour. Wow. I'm just thinking back. We're into our fourth year already, 200-plus episodes, and it's just so amazing the tremendous amount of guests and diversity of guests we've had and shared so many ways to approach autoimmune and to become a thriver. And I always like to say to optimize our health. So tonight, we're going to cover a topic we haven't covered yet. And I was really surprised when this came across my desk because I was, oh my gosh, that's true. We haven't covered it yet. So let me introduce Dr. Julia Greenspan. She's a naturopathic doctor and published author of the book Rising Above Lyme Disease. Yeah, you heard that, Lyme disease. I read an article, oh, maybe a couple of weeks ago, how Lyme disease, the range of the disease is getting broader and broader. We'll talk to her more about it, but for the longest time, I just thought it was sort of an upper northeast of the United States type of problem. Well, I guess it's not anymore, so I thought, let's have her on. She earned her doctorate from the National University of Natural Medicine in 2006 and holds a bachelor's degree of science in psychology from Portland State University in Portland, Oregon. And I had to laugh. I did not know that. And we were just chatting. And we're both natives from Oregon. It's a small world. Let me bring her on. I'll read more of her bio, amazing bio, later into the show. But I want you to hear her story. Thanks, Dr. Julia, for being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You have recovered from Lyme. So what was it like to have Lyme? I mean, I read the stories about it. It sounds just horrific.
Yeah, well, as you said, I originally was born and raised in Oregon. I moved to New Hampshire when I was about 30 years old after I finished medical school. And because of growing up in Oregon, I really didn't have the awareness. I knew Lyme from medical school. I knew Lyme was an issue, and especially in the New England area, but I didn't understand how easy it was to get it. So I had cats that were indoor cats in the city while I was going to school. And when I moved to the country and lived on more acreage, I was like, go outside, be free, you know, but the cats brought in ticks. And I never saw it. I've never, ever seen a tick on me, you know, never pulled one out of my skin. And a majority of the patients I see have the same exact story. Yet over a progressive amount of years, I realized I was getting sicker and sicker and having these symptoms. And just like a lot of us do, I would explain them away. Well, I'm a new mom. I just started a new business. I'm tired, and that's why this hurts or that hurts. And I come to find out that I had contracted Lyme and another co-infection carried by ticks called Babesia, because Lyme isn't the only infection that ticks carry. Now, at the time I was practicing as a naturopathic doctor, I still am, and I was actually focusing in on the treatment of tick-borne disease because of where I live is probably one of the most, here in New Hampshire, is probably one of the most infected areas in the country. So, and there's very few doctors who treat it. And so I was already doing that as a specialty and really didn't have the inner awareness, you know, kind of doctor heal thyself or, and it dawned on me one day after listening to certain symptoms, for some reason, patients were bringing up over and over again that I was like, oh my gosh, like it just sunk in. It just finally like clumped me over the head, like a big piece of concrete, you know, after all this time of just, you know, thinking that I just had X, Y, and Z going on and not related to Lyme. So I tested myself. Sure enough, there it was. And I got started on treatment. And it took about 2 years for me to recover because it had probably been several years that I'd had it and I had no idea.
Now, let me stop for just a second. What are some of the symptoms? Because you said fatigue, that's a common one we can check off on most autoimmunes. And
Yeah. So for me, because of the co-infection piece too. So again, Lyme, ticks will feed off of other animals and they just pick up because the environment is so diverse with microbes in all places, always, that when they're feeding off of another animal, which is how they live, they thrive off of a blood meal, they take in multiple forms of infections, multiple microbes at one time, and they can live in the stomach of the tick. So when the ticks, you know, it might've been one tick that got me, it might've been many bites that I didn't catch, but I ended up having Lyme and Babesia. And because of that, symptoms for me, Lyme-like symptoms are going to be more joint pain, and it's going to be joint pain that's roaming. So it will move from one knee to the next, depending on the time of day, depending on, you know, on Monday, it would be on the right knee, and then by Wednesday on the left knee for no reason.
How frustrating. You're like, did I bang my knee? I mean, that's where my first thing would go, was like, how strange that it roams.
Yes. And it will roam not just between the knees, but, you know, it could be in the shoulder, the neck, your wrists, elbows, you pick anywhere, any joint space, you know, and so you have this roaming joint pain. A lot of people have a lot of foot pain. That was a symptom for me. So getting up out of bed, my feet would hurt on the, you know, terribly by just touching the floor and having my feet land on the floor. Headaches, dizziness, trouble with vision. So light sensitivity, I would have ringing in my ears, and focus and concentration issues. So a lot of brain fog, having a hard time coming up with words, having a hard time maintaining and multitasking, which I was very used to doing. And so when that started to fade and be more difficult, that was very concerning to me, especially having a job in medicine and treating people. You kind of want to, you know, those were amongst some of the main symptoms. Babesia that I brought up has more of the foot pain, also a lot of night sweats and a lot of trouble breathing. So I had a lot of shortness of breath and heart palpitations that would come and go. But the reason why this is kind of sneaky and that you can kind of explain stuff away is that in my case and in a lot of patients' cases, it will, you know, exacerbate. So it'll have a flare and then it'll kind of go away. And then you'll be like, oh, I think I'm fine now. Maybe I just pushed myself too hard. And then it'll come back up again in a few weeks. And sometimes it's, you know, more frequent than that for a lot of patients. But that gives an example of some of the things that were happening to me at the time.
And I hear those, most of those I hear are very common in a lot of autoimmunes, the brain fog, the pain. But I can also listen and hear a few specifics. But I can imagine how hard it is to diagnose for a doctor, especially, let's say, if I contracted it in New Hampshire and came back here to Oregon. Yeah, I'm thinking that my caregiver, that might not be the top of their list of to check off, where in New Hampshire, maybe that's becoming more common to check into. So is it difficult to get diagnosed once we go, man, I'm checking off a lot of those things Dr. Julia just mentioned?
It is. It's difficult to get diagnosed because there's different belief systems about what is a true Lyme case and what it means.
Oh, dude.
Mm-hmm. So there's the political aspect of this, and certain different ways of viewing Lyme and tick-borne disease in regards to what does it actually mean for a test to be positive or not, what Lyme needs to look like. So if somebody comes into the office, their doctors will have a certain belief about, you know, that, oh, well, your knee's not swollen and you didn't see a tick on you and you're not walking in with a tick, it can't be Lyme. It's probably a spider bite. It's probably, and it doesn't have to mean that you have to be on the West Coast or somewhere that there, you wouldn't think there was a lot of Lyme disease, but there actually is quite a bit on the West Coast, unfortunately, and it's growing. But, you know, as far as being in the New England area where it's more well known, it is still very difficult for people to get an accurate diagnosis here and to be heard and listened to, because there's different criteria that the CDC has created. But what I find, and this is just my clinical opinion, this is just one practitioner's opinion, that what the CDC has mandated as what is considered a Lyme patient or a Lyme case based on a lab doesn't match clinically what's happening in people's lives and physically what's happening to people. So a Lyme patient is going to have symptoms in many different areas of their body. But a lot of times people will come in with these illnesses and these complaints. And again, as I said, I never saw a tick on me, so they wouldn't even know to relate it to Lyme. They get funneled into, you know, seeing a rheumatologist or a neurologist or, you know, a specialty because of the symptoms and symptom management. But here, it is very difficult for patients to get a Lyme test and to be and to have that taken seriously, even here in New England, where it's an epidemic.
Wow. Now, a question about it, is it just a United States problem? We have listeners all over the world. Is it worldwide?
It is. And again, give or take, and new strains are being discovered all the time. But based on my research and kind of where things stand right now, there's between 300 and 400 strains that have been identified worldwide. And there are strains of Borrelia. So if we just talk Lyme specifically, there are strains that are more specific to Europe or to China or to Australia. And there are strains that are more specific to the United States.
Mm. So we even have to be vigilant to know wherever we are. And I'm thinking also to tell our healthcare provider, look, I could, you know, I was hiking in, I don't know, China somewhere, and have to let them know that it is a possibility, I guess. I'm curious though, what can we do? Let's say we are hiking somewhere. What are the steps you say not to come down with it?
So I would say the main thing that a lot of people are doing that I recommend, there are companies. So there are products you can use on the body and on the clothes in order to protect yourself. Obviously, the number one thing is going to be, no matter what, doing a tick check after you're working in your yard. See, here you don't need to necessarily go hiking in the mountains to get Lyme in the New England area. You just need to, you might go out and get your mail.
Oh my gosh.
It's that infested. And depending on the time of year and, you know, location. But that being said, here locally, people typically will treat their yards. And there are companies that do organic formulations in order to treat someone's yard so they can feel more safe with their kids and their pets and themselves running around in the yard. As far as self-care, when you're out and about and doing stuff, there are topicals that, again, you would apply to the body. And based on Consumer Reports, and you can actually find it if you were to Google it, there is a product with something, an ingredient called picaridin in it, which is from black pepper. And there's a brand, Sawyer, that seems to have the product that gets most reviewed in that regard. But Consumer Reports took 5 or 6 different types of tick repellents and mosquito repellents and found this product worked the best out of, you know, the other products that had DEET or other botanicals in it. But that can be sprayed on the body and on the clothes externally. And you usually have to do repeat applications. You can't just spray it on once and then go, oh, I'm good for the day and be out for an all day hike. You probably need to reapply, because sprays that are typically used on their body are to deter ticks from coming near you because you don't smell attractive to them. Ticks have a very sensitive sense of smell. It's far beyond a bloodhound. And that's how they survive. They just sit and wait on a blade of grass, and they're able to pick up on our body heat and our carbon dioxide emissions. And they're able to, and then they'll just grab on immediately. Like in an instant, you could walk by a blade of grass and they'll just like, because they can sense you that quickly. They're not flying like a mosquito, and they're not super fast and mobile. So you're using a spray to deter them because you don't smell very appetizing. And so the other treatment that can be done is something called permethrin. And that it should not be applied to the skin, but you can have your clothes treated with that. So you can buy product at the store and then bring it home and treat certain outfits that you would only use when you go out hiking and doing things. And then you can get several washes out of just one treatment, and you would only wash them all together. There are also companies like one in particular, Insect Shield, where you can send this company 5 or 6 different outfits. They'll treat it with the permethrin, and I think they guarantee at least, you know, 70 to 80 or more washes. So, you know, you could send away 5 or 6 outfits and have that be those outfits you would use, you know, for the whole season. And the season here in New England is whenever there's not snow on the ground.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea it was so prevalent.
It's a thing. Yeah. As far as like the clothing is concerned, this isn't just for individuals going out hiking. Many of my patients, they're in landscaping, they're in jobs where they're being, you know, they're in surveying, land surveying, even real estate. If they're taking people to do, you know, home inspections and things like that, and they're outside, you know, it's just these little things that you wouldn't think someone's job would be exposing them to ticks. But, you know, if they're not treating themselves and wearing these clothes every day, then, you know, these individuals are a lot of my patient base. have these types of jobs.
You even mentioned that your pet household pets. So my gosh. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to stop here for a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to get more into the what we can do once we find out we have Lyme disease. So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at sharonsaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with Dr. Julia Greenspan. She is the author of the book Rising Above Lyme Disease. And she's just shared with us her own story of Lyme disease, as well as how prevalent Lyme disease is. I read about it and sort of dismissed it because I live here in the Pacific Northwest. And honestly, unless I'm really out in very specific areas, I have to be honest, I never thought about how prevalent it was. But I'm going to be paying much closer attention now. But I want to turn our attention to this idea of, is Lyme disease a true autoimmune, or does it, a precursor to autoimmune, I guess would be the word, does it create autoimmune?
As far as it creating autoimmune, so the relationship there that I see is that, so we're just going to talk specifically about spirochetes, because I think it would get too big if we tried to talk about the other tick-borne infections, but specifically spirochetes. Spirochetes, I just want to start with the fact that the biggest issue with them is that the spirochetes are shaped like spirals. They're like little corkscrews, and they're very fast. Their corkscrew shape helps them propel themselves through the body. So once a tick bites a human, and this goes into the human's bloodstream, spirochetes don't want to be in the blood. They don't want to be around oxygen. They don't want to be in that space. They love fat and sugar. And so fat is going to be your neurological system. Sugar is going to be more, and protein, sugar proteins are going to be more related to your joints. That those places are perfect homes for them. So they go and they find homes there, and they can drill through tissue and go and land in those spaces. And just their mere presence there. This is where everybody gets a little squirmy. And
yeah. Oh, I had a little bit of shiver there. I was like, oh, that sounds terrible.
I know. I do this every day, so I forget that it can be a little bit yucky. So getting to that. So let's say somebody has a genetic predisposition, a family history of creating autoimmune disease, or let's say they have an HLA-B27 genetic marker, and it's people who more commonly will develop rheumatoid arthritis or some sort of autoimmune issue, Sjogren's or lupus or something along those lines. If Lyme goes into those cavities, the body doesn't want it there, and it will keep trying to clear it from those areas by creating inflammation, by upregulating the immune system to that area, and it starts to look like an autoimmune disease, because as the body tries to attack or fight or get rid of this microbe that it doesn't like being there and that it doesn't belong there, over time it can't necessarily clear the infection very efficiently, but it keeps creating this cyclic inflammation pathway over and over again, and cytokines that are released, which are immune cells that are, you know, that can create inflammation, that inflammation response, and participate in that. And so if that keeps happening over and over again, the tissues start to release things like rheumatoid factor, ANA, you know, in your blood work, you'd start to see positives on certain panels and things like that for autoimmune disease, because those tissues are under stress and distress. But a microbe isn't necessarily being thought of as being the cause. And so then a lot of times people get labeled as having autoimmune disease because here, look at these proteins are elevated. You know, this is happening. We don't know why this is happening. This is just happening to you. And either you have a family history of it, or even if you don't, you know, usually autoimmune disease, you don't have to have a reason for it to happen. Then it becomes more symptom management at that point, right? Because those exist and you're having the pain in your joints. But the original instigator was potentially spirochetes in those spaces in your body, and this repeated inflammation cycle that happens. And then you mix that with your own genetics and your own body milieu, your own stressors, your own other aspects of your health. It can be a perfect storm for upregulating something, whereas you might not have created or manifested autoimmune until later in life. Maybe that wouldn't have happened to you at all, or it wouldn't even have happened, or it wouldn't happen until you were in your 60s or 70s. But now, because of Lyme entering the system, it's like a key, and it just pops it in and goes and turns on those pathways and upregulates and creates an autoimmune picture or autoimmune disease.
Now, can we, if we are aware that we've been bitten by the tick and we're aware that we have this spirochete, can we eliminate them medically, or once we catch them, they're there? They've just drilled into everything and we have to deal with it.
Both.
Oh,
I don't know. Not the answer you're expecting.
Well, I was hoping like, oh, just pop a pill and they're gone.
Yes. So with Lyme, if you catch it early enough in the infection, in the acute phase, like right when you get bit, if you're lucky enough to find a tick on you or to see a bullseye rash, which everybody thinks in terms of Lyme, they think of this, you know, bullseye rash appearance. And only a small percentage of people, in compared to the majority of people that get bit, get that rash at all. So a lot of people dismiss and think, I'm fine, I didn't get anything. And they pull out the tick and like, I didn't get the ring, so I'm okay, and they don't treat. But that doesn't mean you didn't get infected. So as far as treatment, the reason why I say both is because basically I don't know if Lyme ever really officially gets cleared or let's say cured. I don't want to say that it can't either. I don't know for sure. And no doctor could really tell you whether that's the case or not. Because there's no way to go in and find out if those microbes are left over in the system. Okay. But can it be treated? Yes. Can it be, can somebody treat and then be off treatment and go have a high quality of life, not require treatment and go years without needing anything? Yes. Can you get rebit after being treated and get reinfected and go through the same cycle over again? Yes. So just because you get it once doesn't mean you can't get it again. So it really depends on how the body takes in medications. And I typically in my office, depending on what the patient wants, we'll do a combination of antibiotic therapy along with natural medications, herbs, homeopathy, dietary changes, natural medicine, and in combination together. And some people just choose to do natural medicine alone. But it really depends on where somebody is starting with the disease when they're first coming in for medical care. If it's early on in the disease, you have a much easier time of completely eradicating it. If you go and deal with the bite right away and you get treated for an adequate amount of time right at the get-go, you're reducing significantly the chances of becoming a chronic illness patient or heading down that road of autoimmunity.
Right, because you've caught the inflammation before it's gotten way down the road of possibly being out of control.
Well, before the infection embeds in the system. Okay. So Lyme has different stages. And in the acute stage, it's just entered the body. You know, there isn't a large population of them. They haven't really had a chance to get deeper into tissue. The longer the infection stays in the body, the more it goes deeper and deeper into different areas of the body, the neurological system, the, you know, again, joint capsules, muscle, organ systems. And so, you know, the delay in treatment is the really big risk factor here.
Now, it might be a strange question, but if I have the spirochetes, is it transferable to loved ones from me?
Yes. Yeah, I'm saying yes. For a long time, it took me a while to kind of be convinced of that, because a lot of people beg that question or ask that question because spirochetes, syphilis is a spirochete, you know, and we know that that's a sexually transmitted disease. But I have to say, based on the research, that there's enough in the research to show that at least through intimacy within relationship, that it is that there has been shown to be that it can be passed sexually. As far as like giving someone a hug or a kiss, you know, and that type of being passing it through that method or that way, like you would a common cold or something, you don't need to worry about that. It also can be passed from mother to child in utero and also through breast milk.
Wow. Oh my gosh, so much to know about Lyme that we don't know.
Yeah, because the baby's gut when they're first born is so naked, it's so, you know, it doesn't have an immunity yet. So normally Lyme would not be transmitted orally. You can't swallow Lyme or breathe it in. It really has to come in through the bloodstream or come into the bloodstream. It doesn't just sit out in open air. You know, asking the question and in all honesty, you know,
it's possible.
It is possible. Yeah.
So much I did not know. What else of that? Because I'm just sitting here sort of gobsmacked. What else should we know about Lyme as far as when, let's say we have it, we've gone through protocols. Does it flare or is it actually a reinfection? I know with a lot of autoimmune conditions, it's what we call a flare. You've never really quite, well, as I say, they don't ever say you're cured. They just say you're, you know, in remission or doing better. Does it flare?
Yeah, it does. So, and also there's something common in the Lyme community. It's referred to as a Herxheimer reaction.
Excuse me, a what?
Yes, I know. It's officially called the Jarosch-Herxheimer reaction, named after two scientists who discovered that when the body is trying to get rid of toxins, that it will upregulate an inflammation reaction, sort of like a hangover. Okay. Or, you know, the closest thing you could think of that would be the easiest or simplest way would be to think in terms of a hangover. But in Lyme, when you start to treat Lyme, people's symptoms will get worse before they get better. And that will flare, will go up and down and up and down over, you know, like for a period of time. And as a practitioner, I know that the patient is getting better when I have them on the same treatment and they're not getting the flares anymore. And we treat until those flares disappear for a good period of time before I stop. And a good chunk of people end up not having flares come back or end up not having a relapse. But a lot of patients do because our body's just not done or time goes by and spirochetes repopulate that couldn't quite clear out of a certain area or they got bit again. And in this area where I am, it is so completely easy to, it could go either way. You know, it could very easily be a new bite that they didn't even know about, especially if they're well for a couple of years and then all of a sudden have a flare. But you also have to take into consideration Lyme patients also will, you know, if they're doing well, but all of a sudden, just as I'm sure with autoimmune, if there's a death in the family, if they have a car accident, if something happens that's even kids leaving for college, you know, and or just any major life transitions, they get fired from a job and shocked by that. That can cause a flare. So stress definitely, just like with any other illness, plays a role here.
Does diet and nutrition other than the obvious play a role? Because I know a lot of times in autoimmune, it plays a much more integral role than just what I'd say the obvious of getting the right nutrients and vitamins and things.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I would say on a whole, most Lyme patients usually end up needing to remove gluten from their diet. They end up becoming more sensitive to it. And that they get more joint pain, they get more brain fog, you know, more symptoms from foods. Their gut becomes a little bit more sensitive to things because the immune system is so bogged down with an infection that it's starting to now overreact to foods that it normally wouldn't have before. So a lot of times I'll do food sensitivity testing with patients or look into gut permeability and, you know, like leaky gut is a term that comes up quite often. Look into those components and make sure that the gut is healthy and that we remove things from the diet. There's also the component of obviously the common sense eating, you know, reducing or eliminating sugars that are not healthy for us. So my hard and fast rule is anything that's made out of white powder or, you know, like white sugar, white flour and built into something like a pasta, a bread, or any, you know, grains, pastries, things like that. Those just got to go. And that's not easy for a lot of patients to make that change. But once they finally do, it can make a huge, huge change in how they move through them and progress and start to improve and get better and get over it faster. Lyme.
Well, a quick question right before this quick commercial break, and it might be too big a question, but I'm just curious, what are other autoimmunes that it's often mistaken for? So like someone might say, you have XYZ, and later down the road, it turns out to be Lyme. Are there specific ones that are more common where someone's going, you know, they told me I have XYZ, but you know, it's never quite seemed right.
So rheumatoid and juvenile RA, when, and especially a lot of people go down those paths and do the treatments, Sjogren's, lupus, they go and they do the standard treatments, but they aren't responding to the you know, Humira, or if the rheumatologist recommends prednisone, or you know, methotrexate and things like that. If they're putting them on those meds and they're not having the standard response, they're not getting the benefit out of it, or they're getting some benefit but not all the way there, but still are struggling with pain, and are having these relapses, and also doing their own research. So a lot of people who come and find me are stepping into being more savvy and researching and wanting to have an answer as to whether Lyme is really the answer or not. And then they might go and ask their PCP, and the PCP may not be comfortable with pursuing that, or their specialist may not be comfortable and may be very secure in that diagnosis and not want to look at something else. So a lot of times people will come find me to do testing for Lyme to rule that in or out.
I think that's critically important, is that curiosity of yourself, curiosity of your own body, and coming up with your own path, your own detective work, is what I felt, and not only in my diagnosis, but in many of my people here in the community, their diagnosis, they said, well, you know, we got close, but it wasn't until I got curious and very curious that I researched myself. So we'll be right back. We need to take one final quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about this. Like I said, I'm just blown away. I had no idea that this is exactly what Lyme disease is. Wow. We'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free, non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with Dr. Julia Greenspan. She's a naturopathic doctor and published author of the book Rising Above Lyme Disease. In all honesty, she's just been blowing me away with all of this information about Lyme disease. I had no idea about the depth and breadth of it. And I really appreciate her correlation to autoimmune for us to understand that they can often be misunderstood. I wanted to get into more about this idea of being misunderstood. I find a lot of people, and I'll raise my hand on this one, was really tired at the beginning of questioning my own sanity. And it sounds like Lyme disease can fall into that category where you're often misdiagnosed or misunderstood.
Yeah, in fact, that's a conversation I've had several times with patients today. So I was mentioning, you know, that it was commonly thought, you know, the term fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis, these things, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that was thought to be something referred to as psychosomatic. So that somebody's psychological state was creating symptoms in the body. That is not really an authentic disease, and that people need to pursue medication and psychiatric help in order to help them deal with their stressors because it's manifesting as a physical thing, but they're really not experiencing a physical thing. And what's happening with Lyme, that's happening now with tick-borne disease. And so frequently patients come to me with either other doctors, family members, people at work telling them the same thing when they say, I have Lyme, or I think I have Lyme, I think this is what's going on, or when they actually do have Lyme, that they're being dismissed and labeled as having a psychosomatic condition.
Or the trend disease.
Yeah. Oh, that's the fad now. Everybody thinks they have Lyme. And what this is creating, and again, you know, what this is creating is a whole collection and culture of people that feel very disenfranchised and feel, you know, and that's part of actually the healing process. It's hard enough to have the disease itself, but then the piece where you have to now recover from just trying to find acceptance and trying to find support in the community and try to have people look at you with eyes of compassion and be able to like acknowledge. So if you came to somebody and said, I have cancer, you wouldn't have to say anything beyond that. You could say it at any time, anywhere, and people will look. And of course they will be like, oh my gosh, is there anything I can do? How can I help you? And if you say, I have Lyme, it's like, well, you know, you took an antibiotic for a week or two. You should be better by now, right? You're not better yet. Like, what's wrong? Either the doctor you have is not doing their job, or maybe you're holding on to this a little bit longer and kind of milking it. this is kind of a frequent energy, or maybe you're not doing the right treatment and, you know, you should go try this. But it's really, it creates a lot of isolation. And so my motivation in writing the book is that a majority of people So a lot of people get worried that if they get tick-borne disease, sometimes I get asked a lot, am I going to die? Is this, you know, and I bring that up because the majority of the people that passed away from Lyme is suicide because of pain and because of isolation and because of being, you know, segmented in the, you know, or segregated in a sense in the community and feeling lost and, you know, and kind of abandoned by the medical establishment and by family and friends, and they isolate. And neurologically, their symptoms cause them to isolate because they cannot, trying to be out in the world with their symptoms of sensory issues and pain, they are at home all the time. And then that they can't form relationships and maintain relationships that way. So that also creates more isolation for them. Understanding that more about individuals that have tick-borne disease or have Lyme, my goal is to try to help further that understanding so that we don't have people out there suffering merely just by being kind of cast aside. You know, that's something we can do something about. We can't do anything to make Lyme be faster than, or clear from the body faster than how it will and how it is, depending on who that person is and how they're responding to treatment. But we can do something about how we treat that individual. And the only way to change that is through understanding it with more depth and breadth, which is what we're trying to do with this conversation here, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that's common for all autoimmune, we call them the invisible illness, where people say, you look fine.
Yes.
It's like,
exactly what a Lyme patient would tell you, that somebody would say, you look fine. And they say, I feel like the walking dead.
Exactly. Just because I'm standing and smiling doesn't mean I'm fine. It's one of the common things that I hear all too often. And I can absolutely relate. I've felt that way before in a marvelous place right now. And I think what I'm hearing, though, is a lot of the things that help autoimmune, quality sleep, diet, nutrition, de-stressing, detoxifying your home, can help, won't cure, but can help ease some of the symptoms. Is that correct?
That is correct. So all of those factors being brought in, as well as having a really, ideally, a support system, because Lyme is a marathon. On average, I would say a chronic Lyme patient. So we got to distinguish between an acute Lyme, you know, just comes in with a new bite, you know, or within a couple months of getting infected, totally different path than somebody who might've had it for several months or years. And I would say the average treatment time in my office is, you know, up to a year of treating, and even more for some, depending on how debilitated they are. So it's also preparing and being psychologically, socially, mentally, emotionally supported, and that everybody's aware that that's what's going to be happening. Potentially, and that they, knowing that they're, you know, can provide the support that's needed for the individual, as well as implementing all those changes or staying steady with the medications and the self-care and the environmental stuff.
Now, I want to circle back to the medications for just a minute. You had mentioned, if I took my notes here correctly, about a combination of herbal type products as well as an antibiotic. Are you on when you have Lyme? On this for the entire year or more? And how does that affect the system and the gut and the body? I'm thinking about long-term use of antibiotics is often.
Yep. And that's a common question and it's a valid concern. So right now with what we have available on the market for treating chronic Lyme, whereas antibiotics are not an ideal solution, that if managed properly, I've seen people become stronger for them. And for the people that choose to use it, again, not everybody wants that for themselves. And people do have concerns about that and are concerned, worried, scared to use them or have allergies or for some reason that doesn't work for them. And natural medicine works better. But if someone chooses to do both, I see that leaving Lyme disease alone and not being aggressive with it actually ends up being more harmful in the long run. I will say that basically that individuals that have chosen to use them, I did myself. I used everything and also utilized energy medicine, Reiki, massage, physical medicine, acupuncture. But those who choose to use them, I more oftentimes see, a majority of the time, people become healthier because what Lyme disease does to the body over a long period of time versus the worry or concern about what an antibiotic will do, you know, the risk to benefit ratio there has to be taken into consideration. And as long as the gut is protected, I have found at least clinically, as long as the gut is protected with a really healthy, huge amount of probiotics while the person is going through it, most people sail through using them quite easily, not without some side effects, but at least they're manageable and it's not something that's long standing. It's not something that debilitates the immune system. If you'd seen me 6 years ago, prior to even using antibiotics, you wouldn't even recognize me. And I was on them for 2 years and, you know, here I am 6 years later off of treatment and it's, I'm fine. My immune system works beautifully. My gut works fine, but I can understand the concern of being on them. The question is, when you're staying on them, you want to make sure you're getting benefit from using them and that you're seeing change and that you're seeing positive stuff happening, even if you're not all the way there. And that's something that working with a doctor who's skilled at, you know, using this and has treated Lyme with success and has competency in that they'll be able to know when it's time to let the antibiotics go, when it's not safe, or, you know, that it's okay to go ahead and stay on them, or if the patient just wants to come off them themselves for their own personal choice. But again, I can understand the concern. We need to be really careful with not developing things like C. difficile or yeast overgrowth and having that get out of control. That's not a safe or acceptable way to have that happen.
Right. Now, this sounds like all autoimmune types of situations as well, where it has to be properly managed and carefully managed. One of my questions is, what were the questions we would ask someone? Oftentimes, a practitioner will... maybe not quite as experienced as I would like to be. What are some questions that we might ask a practitioner to find out if this is really one of their specialties or something that they know enough about so they can be a team member and properly help the patient manage it?
So I'd say the easiest way to find a doc that follows my same philosophy would be to check in with a organization called ILADS. And so this is a collection of doctors across the world that treat similarly. This is a collection of MDs, DOs, nurse practitioners, nurses, chiropractors, naturopaths, practitioners of all sorts that basically come together and collect data and, typically meet once or twice a year in a large convention, but that support and try to create a set of guidelines that that follows more what's happening clinically with patients. And it's not to be in opposition to the Centers for Disease Control. It's not to be, but it's really just to go, okay, this is what doctors are breaking away and saying, you know, I'm seeing that there's a problem here. You know, the emperor isn't wearing any clothes, basically. Okay. And so if you want to find a doctor that sort of follows the same philosophy and that is trained, because they'll train doctors and they also train doctors on complementary forms of medicine. So natural form, as well as the antibiotic use and with tick-borne disease. And that organization is growing more and more. And so that would be an easy way to find a doctor. And they're all over the country. There's not that many of us. So it's not like you calling up your average MD, you may have success with sitting and asking your medical doctor at least to be tested for Lyme and what their thoughts are and their opinions are about it. And they may not be comfortable treating it. They may not be feel that that is that's going on, but at least can be compassionate and supportive about your concerns about it and be willing to test you for it and be willing to support if you want to go see somebody else who might be treating that for you instead of being the opposite is being dismissive and kind of a little bit confrontational because of the belief that what you might be exploring doesn't exist. And for some people that can be really difficult to have that discussion with the doctor they may have worked with for, you know, decades. So I hope that, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah. Because I was thinking about where what we've learned today is how in-depth this has to be, that it really should be, in my mind, going to someone who has treated it before and is very familiar with it, because it sounds like it can cause a whole host of issues. And I'm curious, do you ever see, it seems like it would be possible, do you ever see Lyme disease and someone having another autoimmune?
Yes.
Instead of being mistaken for an autoimmune, that there really are two things going on instead of a Lyme or a something else?
Yeah, absolutely. And so again, whether, you know, debating about which triggered and catapulted what first, but typically, you know, like what came first, their autoimmune disease, or maybe they caught Lyme along the way that made it even more enhanced or more difficult for them. Basically, I do have patients that will have a true, what I believe to be a true, like, let's say rheumatoid arthritis. You know, they have the gnarl, the joints that are symmetrically swelling on the hands and the changes in the fingers and the ability to use them. And so they'll have that going along in a process and yet still have a test that says that they're CDC positive, Centers for Disease Control positive, according to their standards, for Lyme disease at the exact same time. Yet they also will have rheumatoid factor elevated, or RA factor elevated. They'll have their CCP antibodies elevated, their SED rate and their C-reactive protein, you know, all the things you would see, as well as obviously the joint, you know, the joint issues happening at the same time. And so a lot of times when individuals have that process going on, treating the Lyme isn't going to necessarily, it's not going to change, mutate or changes in the gnarling of the joints and things like that. It typically won't back that down. It may bring the swelling down, but it may not change depending on how advanced that is. But it at least could take down, it could slow down the pace of how quickly that's happening. Again, because what Lyme does is comes in and puts in a key and basically just turns that engine on and takes it from 0 to 60. And so it makes that autoimmune disease just progress even faster. And so, and become less responsive to medications or to herbs like turmeric or fish oil and things like that, that normally would take down inflammation. And so treating the Lyme can slow the progression of the autoimmune disease or even stop it for a period of time where you would be in that remission period and not have it keep going and keep creating pain. And ideally improve quality of life if the factor of the microbe isn't there or isn't as present.
Well, we're going to have you back, Dr. Julia, because I can see this is a much deeper topic than we can cover in our show today. But I really appreciate you bringing the awareness so that we can begin to do deeper research if we're going, boy, what she was talking about sure seems like what I'm going through or perhaps my friend is going through. And that's so helpful for us to at least be pointed in the right direction. Valuable information. Please share with us more about you and where we can get your book and your website. And how we can connect with you if we're going, you know, I think I got Lyme. I got to talk to Dr. Julia Greenspan.
Yeah. Well, the book itself can be purchased on, of course, you know, your retail booksellers. So Amazon, Barnes and Noble. And I have a website for the book, www.risingabovelymedisease.com. And then my clinic website here in my medical practice is greenhousemedicine.com. And I'm here in Amherst, New Hampshire. So you can find out more about who I am and learn more about what I do by visiting the website. And then all the contact information is on there for my clinic.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Julia Greenspan, for sharing with us. And again, the name of her book is Rising Above Lyme Disease. We'll have that up on understandingautoimmune.com for you, so you can find that as well as her other contact information. And also be sure and get the transcript. She shared so much valuable information that I know you'll want to print out that transcript and highlight certain things. And if you're thinking you have Lyme disease, definitely sounds like definitely follow it up with the proper people who can diagnose it properly. It sounds like time is of the essence with Lyme disease for sure. So everyone, join me next Friday for another episode of the Autoimmune Hour. And also join me over at Facebook under Autoimmune Hour. We're also under Instagram under Autoimmune Hour and Twitter, Autoimmune Hour. So you can join the conversation and community there as well. And we'll be able to see, if you're not watching the video now, you pop over to Understanding Autoimmune on YouTube and you can see Dr. Julia right here for us in video as well. So all these different options to continue to get more information. Everyone, have a great weekend. Join me next Friday night for another episode. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com.